Hey, today's episode is brought to you by SunsetLakeCBD.com. SunsetLakeCBD.com, they have a wide array of CBD products. This started out as a family farm that provided a dairy for Ben and Jerry's. And then about 2018, these guys decided to branch out a little bit, and they started to grow hemp, and they did so 100% pesticide free. They did it with organic fertilizers only. With the help of the University of Vermont, they were practicing, and they do practice regenerative agriculture. Also have great business practices, $15 minimum wage and for everybody. And the company is primarily employee owned, and they have great CBD products. They've got, we all have our favorites, I feel like, around here. But I've turned so many people on to the tincture. This, for me, has been a godsend in terms of, like, getting rest and sleeping, frankly. They just came out with the CBD chocolate fudge, and I can tell you it's delicious, and it's a different experience when you eat it. It takes about a half an hour to kick in, but you can check that out. It's delicious. Makes a great gift. They also have CBD infused coffee. Right now, I think they have a Costa Rican blend that is my weekend brew. They have a salve with arnica that I use for sore muscles, but for me primarily, it's been really great for my eczema. And now they have, like, all sorts of different flavors. Matt, have you checked this out? Matt is a big fan of the smalls. What's the smalls, Matt?
Yeah, I've been, especially the special sauce smalls. They're these little sort of pre-stemmed nugs that you can put right in your grinder and add a nice little CBD sort of kick to whatever you're grinding up.
I just am looking on this and I'm thinking, I got to try the sampler flights, all seven strains they have, because I can't quite figure out, like, what is, like, the names are all, like, you know, Hawaiian Haze. Like, I don't know what that means. Super sour space candy. Like, I don't. Do you know how to, like, delineate, or is just, you just get a random name for them?
Yeah, I think it's probably based on scent, typically. Oh. But maybe there's a bit of a, like, the psychic effect of it.
All right. Well, they've learned, but there is no psychic effect, right? I mean, that's the thing, is it is.
Or like the mood, I guess.
I smoked some of the pre-rolls, and you get a weird sort of, like, physical mellowness, and you keep anticipating the psycho qualities, but they don't happen. Anyways, you gotta check it out. They're a great company, and we've gotten just great feedback about all of their products. SunsetLakeCBD.com. They're fans of the show, so they made their coupon code Left is Best at SunsetLakeCBD.com. It gets you 20% off. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. Now, on with this program.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 5th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, voting on amendments begins in the Senate on the COVID-19 relief bill. This is after 10 hours of reading the bill out loud. Heather Parton, or Digby, will be here to discuss and more. Also, late negotiations warps the unemployment insurance in the bill. Meanwhile, in New York State, a report, Cuomo staff actively involved in covering up the nursing home deaths. Pope visits Iraq amidst fears COVID-19 spread. The Fed investigating the Capitol riot have records of communications between U.S. lawmakers and rioters. They have their cell phones, folks. Those things go two ways, incidentally. Manhattan DA race may lead to a sex work decriminalization. U.S. blocked Myanmar junta's $1 billion Fed withdrawal. Juntas. And thousands in Mississippi are still without water after those storms. All that and more on today's program. I should also say later in the program, in the second half, Andy Kindler, comedian, will be joining us. In the meantime, I want to say welcome back to Emma Vigeland, who had a little little back issue yesterday.
Yeah, a little back issue. It's contagious. Must be.
Apparently, like, that happens every other like week. I'm out with a back problem. You're out with a back problem.
I've never had this before, but it was an exercise injury. I'll just say that. I went a little too hard.
You know, I think, you know, the bottom line is that this is a very, in talking to and just reading what some mental health providers have been suggesting, you know, the anxiety, the low grade anxiety of living in a pandemic for a year, I think it, you know, impacts people in many different ways. And I think honestly, like I would bet, this is purely speculation on my part, but I would bet that there's like more physical maladies that people are having, even though in some ways we're less active.
It
feels like we are.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a very holistic view of health. That the
Thank
mind
you.
And the body are connected, and I
Thank
would
Thank you
agree.
Very much, Emma. I appreciate that. Yeah. Somebody finally noticed that I did have a holistic view of that. Folks, this is right now as we speak. There are senators in the Senate chambers. They are voting on amendments as we speak. There has been some negotiations. We'll talk to Digby about this that have happened in the past couple hours about the unemployment insurance of the bill. It's a $1.9 trillion bill. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about with Heather Parton, or Digby, as you may know her, is the idea of the Republicans barely engaging in this fight. There does not seem to be any response from Republicans about this bill other than it's too big. And I'll tell you, I remember hearing this about the Affordable Care Act too. They went on and on about how many pages it was, like the number of pages in the legislation is somehow an indication of that it's a bad piece of legislation. The other tact has been taking, like, do you know how much money this is? It could reach the sky. Here is Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. Cannot hear him. Let's try that one more time. Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson.
Yes, or $1.9 trillion. You have to use analogies. Again, the human mind really can't contemplate what a trillion is. I found this first analogy. My wife talked to me about it in terms of time. So this one is simply talking about it. If I would give you, Madam President, a dollar per second, how long would it take me to give you $1 million? Well, you see the chart here. It would take 11.6 days. Again, a dollar per second. How much for $1 million? 11.6 days. Next question. How long would it take you to...
Pause it for 1 second.
$1 billion.
Because I think we all can relate to the idea of somebody giving us a dollar per minute, right? I mean, who amongst us has not been in a situation where we haven't gotten a dollar per minute, where someone's handing you a dollar per minute. We all go through this in our everyday lives where people are handing you a dollar per minute.
Yeah,
can I have my change, please?
Stare into each other's eyes.
Here's a dollar.
I'd say nothing and then hand each other dollars on a timer every minute.
Here's a dollar. You know, that's like when you go and you get that, you know, 70, that dollar and a quarter, you know, water at the bodega, and you give them a 20. It's just like you got 19 minutes almost. And it's just like this. Very relatable. It's a great metaphor, but continue.
Would it take you to accumulate $1 billion? Again, you do the math, you find out it would take 31.7 years. That's back when the Chinese had their protests in Tiananmen Square.
What?
So the next question is, what about $1 trillion? And this is what becomes mind-boggling.
I got news for you. It's already mind-boggling. Go ahead. Continue to play.
A dollar every second. And I wanted to give you $1 trillion. It would take 31,688 years to give you $1 trillion.
Oh, thanks. Now I get it.
This is so much clearer to me.
The last glaciation period, a period in time when Wisconsin was under a mile thick glacier. By the way, quick little aside for my
right
from Rhode Island. Since that point in time, about 20,000 years ago, the water level in the Bay of San Francisco has increased 390 feet. Now that's global warming. That's a rise in the sea level. But that's what happened through natural causes. But that was an aside.
What?
What?
$1.9 trillion. 60,000 years.
Wow.
Over 60,000 years.
He's really mixing metaphors.
Context,
oh, my gosh.
The human race began to develop language about 50,000 years ago. So that's the time analogy.
Really makes you think.
This is, I have to say, is he going to, all right, pause it for 1 second. Well, let me just like, this is, and I apologize. I think I said a dollar a minute, and it's actually a dollar a second.
Oh.
Right? A dollar a second. They're handing out to you really, really quick.
Yeah.
So you get your change back super quick. So let me, so this is how Ron Johnson anticipates his constituents are going to talk about how horrific this bill is. And they're going to say, like, do you realize that this bill is like the age when there was ice covering all of like Green Bay and also like the sea rise in San Francisco with all the money? If you put all the money in the Bay of San Francisco, the sea would rise.
Well, what happened to it touching the sky? I mean,
well, like, that's coming up next. See,
right,
now he just did temporal and now it's spatial.
Yes, yeah, so it's
temporal, spatial.
It's very clear.
I brought a dollar bill to just demonstrate its thickness, but the thickness of a dollar bill is 4.3 thousandths of an inch thick.
Right.
Okay. Super easy for me to visualize.
I can imagine that. Everybody who amongst us can't imagine 4.0043 inches. Of course.
Yeah. And why would these trillions have to be stacked in $1 bills? And what does that prove? I'm not sure.
I do appreciate the fact that he realized at one point, like, oh, wait a second. If I really wanted to explain this in a way that people could imagine it, I would bring the bill. I would bring the dollar bill. Like,
yeah.
He's saying the human mind can't abstractly appreciate how much $1.9 trillion is. But I got news for you. The human mind also can't abstractly appreciate how thick 0.0043 inches are.
He really just needed to say a dollar bill because that's a little bit more attached to everybody's reality than the metric thickness.
But he wanted
dollar.
To show that he could do math.
Yeah.
So continue.
And knows history.
Yeah.
Let's start with a million. If you stacked $1 million bills on top of each other, they would stack up to be 358 feet high. You can see the calculation here.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Right.
Where's the calculation for 358? I don't see that.
35-foot story building. So how big would a stack of $1 billion bills be?
Well, why would you do it in dollar bills? Why wouldn't you just do a check?
Why would you do it in gold bars?
There's something called the
good
carbon
point.
Line. think I'm pronouncing that right. That's the point where the atmosphere ends and outer space begins. That's the 62 miles.
We got Neil deGrasse Tyson over here.
I don't think we need to see any more. The point is, I think this sets the table for the conversation with Heather, and that is there is no response from the Republicans.
But he did try today, or go. It was yesterday going into 2 a.m. this morning, for the entire bill to be read by poor Senate aides. I mean, Axios framed it as Ron Johnson forced the Senate aides until 2 in the morning to read, how long is that bill? 628 pages.
He did indeed. He said you got to read the whole thing.
I'm shocked that he didn't stack 628 pages on top of each other and then show us first the thickness of the paper. I wonder how that compares to the thickness of the dollar bill. I want to visualize it too. Maybe he could use like some sort of cardboard paper in order to make his point more effective. But I needed that visualization because now I don't know how I feel about the stimulus package.
And here's the most ridiculous part about it. At the end of all that, you imagine this huge stack of $1 bills. And then he basically, the implication is, and all of this is going directly to the American public to help them. Isn't that horrible?
Not to Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Heather Parton or Digby. Folks, today's program is sponsored in part by Freshly. I've told this story many times before. I'm going to tell it again. A lot of reasons why you might order Freshly. Obviously, dinner time can be a little bit chaotic with Freshly. It's super easy. Freshly's chefs take care of your meals a few nights a week, takes the pressure off of you. In my case, the way I was introduced to Freshly was we're helping out my mom. She's getting up there and having some issues, and we wanted to make sure that she was eating properly. We looked around, my sisters and I, for the best service, like the best one we could find. We decided on Freshly. We sent her the food. But the thing is, my mom would not be happy if she thought we were paying for her meals. And so we told a little white lie, this is a couple of years ago, that they were sponsoring the show and they were giving me more or less like a lifetime of free meals, which I should tell you is not the case. And, but my mom was like, oh, okay, in that case. And she loved it. She got like every time she would get the peppercorn steak, I imagine they still have that. She would say, she would literally call me and be like, this is great. I'm telling all my friends. And this, I'm so happy that they support your show. And, you don't feel great about having to maintain that fiction, but your mom's eating well. And then just coincidentally, they found the show and they wanted to support it. So I was very happy to do it. And what they do is they offer these chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals. They deliver them directly to your door, and there's no cooking required. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week. You stick them in the fridge. You keep them stocked. You skip the trip to the store or the takeout or whatever it is. Ordering is super easy. You go to Freshly.com. You choose from over 30 meals. They have the sausage baked penne or chicken pesto bowl and a steak peppercorn. Freshly can fit your lifestyle. They have a variety of plans and meals to pick from that works for your needs. And now for our listeners, you can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Your meals are ready to heat and enjoy in 3 minutes. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to Freshly.com/majority. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to Freshly.com/majority for $40 off your first two orders. That's Freshly.com/majority for $40 off your first two orders. And this is another product that we've used around here, ZipRecruiter. Finding great candidates for your job can be like trying to find a needle in a haystack. You can post your job on some, message board, but what does it do there? It just sits there. Well, with ZipRecruiter, they go out and they find candidates. ZipRecruiter, and you can try it now for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Like I say, ZipRecruiter does the work for you. When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, get sent out to over 100 top job sites with one click. And then ZipRecruiter's matching technology finds people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. How do I know this? Because Brendan, that's how we got Brendan on the show. ZipRecruiter. We went out and grabbed him practically. We had a ton of qualified candidates, but Brendan was just, it was like somebody like worked him up in a laboratory to work on this show. So while other services may overwhelm you with applications to sift through, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for, the needle in the haystack. In fact, ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Right now, you can go to ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority, M-A-J-O-R-I-T-Y, majority. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. And also, today is March 5th. It is a very special day for me because it is my sister Julie's birthday.
Oh, and happy birthday, Julie.
She has been a huge help on this program, does a lot of the sort of administrative work on the program. She's also been spending a lot of time taking care of my mom. I'm very, very grateful for her as a sister. And so I want to give her one of these. Also, one other birthday shout out. This is happening on March 7th, which happens to be my son's birthday, coincidentally. But I get this email from Jess. Hey, Team Majority Report. It's my wonderful partner Shay's 36th birthday on Sunday, March 7th. And a birthday shout out on the Friday 5th episode would mean so much to him. Here's a photo of Shay in full pandemic super dad form wearing his beloved Posit t-shirt with our 9-month-old daughter. You ready for this? Myla. What a coincidence.
Wow.
He shares my son's birthday and he has a daughter named Myla. I promise you, we did not know Sam's daughter was named Myla when we decided on her name. Just a beautiful, strange coincidence. Well, maybe he secretly knew and didn't tell me when I chose the name. Good job, Shay from Vancouver. And a happy birthday to you as well. All right. Want to welcome back to the show the proprietor of the Uber blog, Hullabaloo, and writer from Salon.com, Heather Parton, or Digby. Heather, here she comes.
She comes.
Here I am.
Thanks for joining us, Heather.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So there, you know, we're planning to talk about, obviously, the COVID relief bill. And there has been sort of like some late breaking news on it in terms of a negotiation that happened with the unemployment insurance. Do you want to update us on that, Shai?
I think you should.
Okay.
Since I am not up to date on
it. All right. This is fairly late breaking. The bill, as it was yesterday, had $400 a week extra, starting presumably in mid-March. $400 a week extra federal supplement to unemployment insurance through the month of August. They have now cut it down to $300, but extended it through the month of September. And they have made the first $10,200 tax free, and that's retroactive. We knew that there was problems with the bill. So dollar for dollar, it's more or less a wash, but let's just start with this because it's also why we don't have the $15 minimum wage. And it's also why, you know, we don't have the $600 in particular expansion of unemployment benefits, which was wildly successful during the first five months of the pandemic. They are very afraid. And by they, I mean sort of like the, you know, the business corporatists are very afraid that this discourages people to go to work, that extra $100. And so they're willing to spend the same amount of money, some level, you know, people who have been unemployed now are going to be subsidizing the expansion for unemployment people later. And the tax fix was pretty important because you don't want to surprise, $1,000, $1,500, $500 tax bill. But there is something really sick and been omnipresent in some of these lawmakers' minds of like, you don't want to encourage people, you know, you want to like push them out the door to work in this instance.
Exactly. And, you know, this has been from the very beginning, even in the, you know, the early days when they first started the, the mitigation efforts and closed down businesses and what have you, that when they started to open them up back in the spring, when the virus was still raging and we were all kind of, you know, at sixes and sevens, not really knowing what was going to happen, you'd get these news reports of business owners going, I just can't find anybody to work. And I remember thinking at the time, yeah, no kidding. You know, there's a virus raging through the population. I mean, no, people are being told not to leave their house. What do you expect here? So there's been this sort of thing going through the whole thing that, well, we're being a little too generous and people aren't, you know, coming back to work. And, you know, I have no doubt. I mean, that probably there are some people who did a little bit better on unemployment than they did working at their minimum wage job. And that just argues for the fact that we need a higher minimum wage, right? I mean, this is, to me, that sort of, if this is true, that people would rather be on unemployment than actually have a job and, you know, have a future and do what we all do, which is live out in society and do things, that tells you something about the job market, not about unemployment or about these people's character. Now, you know, you mentioned the tax thing, and that was very important and politically wise of the Democrats to do this, because this was sort of something that bubbled up over just recently in the last couple of weeks when they realized that people were going to be hit with a big tax bill because they for their unemployment. And it was said up front that that would happen. But still, you know, you're applying for unemployment. That's really not that's the last thing you're thinking about, right? Right. That you're going to have a tax bill, especially people who are working at the lower end of the you know, economic scale, who are used to getting a refund and then suddenly be hit with a bill. I mean, that's a terrible political situation, and it's just wrong. I mean, they shouldn't be punished for, you know, for losing their jobs in the middle of a pandemic. So that was smart to do it. The one thing I think is really strange, and I mentioned this to you the other day, when they did this adjustment in it for the limits on who could get the $1,400 and raised it in a number of areas to the point where I think we decided it was something like 12 million minimum number of people who were not going to get the benefit that they thought they were going to get. And one of the things they asked somebody, you know, well, are you going to move that over into the into UI, which kind of made sense. You know, if you're going to save money here, at least give it to the people who are unemployed, right? I mean, so you're worried about some, you know, upper middle class person getting money that they don't need and just putting it in their savings account. Why not take that money and put it into the unemployment portion? And as you mentioned to me, this may have been a turf thing of some sort, that it was in the wrong committees or they had some kind of limits on which committees could do it. That seems like kind of an arcane problem. But nonetheless, the idea being that if you're going to save money here, at least put it into something meaningful for the people who really need it. And they said, well, no, it's really not enough to make that worthwhile.
Right.
Which tells you it was arbitrary to begin with. It was just some kind of a compromise for the sake of compromise. And now here we have them actually lowering the weekly amount, which perhaps instead of doing that, they could have just, you know, or at least put the money in there somehow to somehow benefit. So, because you say it's a wash, so they didn't obviously do that. So I don't really know. I mean, all of this seems like, you know, people coming in and needing to have some input and getting
it. I do think it is this notion that there is a belief that you are, well, and it may be the case, like you say, there may be some people who are like, you know what, I'm going to stay. I mean, let's be clear. The way you get on unemployment is that you lose your job.
Right.
So you were working and you lose your job. So it's not like you know, people have the option of, hey, I can either work at this job I'm at or I can get unemployment. No, it's you lose your job. You can't quit and go get unemployment. That means you lost your job. And then the question is like, how quickly are people going back to work at that point? Now, the idea that there's going to be, you know, it's conceivable if, you know, you're saying like, okay, I'm worried that this might inhibit people to go back to work in March of next year. But this isn't, you know, this doesn't last that long, even into September. It's like, if people are not going back to work, a big part of it is probably they're a little nervous to go back to work. And the idea that, I mean, I think there is a genuine concern that like, hey, this could actually increase how much we have to pay people to come back to work. Right. I mean, that's what it really is about, is that these people who are so the idea of spending the same amount of money is not the issue. The idea is that we don't want any given person to get that much, because that will soften. Strengthen essentially the workers' bargaining power in the context of their relationship with employers. And, you know, we might want them to have a certain amount of economic anxiety that's going to, you know, get them off the couch, even though they're like, COVID or electric bill. Well, I got to pay the electric bill, so I'll just risk the COVID. This is a real problem, obviously, at least, you know, enough members of the Democratic Party have. And we should say this is all. We should say that we're stating this with the understanding that if one of those two senators in Georgia lost, that we would not be having this conversation. This conversation would be about how Mitch McConnell is preventing any more unemployment insurance, period, end of story. Never mind talking about 1400. All of that would be, this would all be moot at that point. So it is, I just want to make that clear that, you know, we're expressing it with that understanding. There, you know, the Republicans are not engaging in this whatsoever. All right, let me just go down some of what's in this bill so that people have a sense of it. If you are a middle-class family of four, in fact, this applies to 86% of the country. If you are a middle-class family of four, you will get $5,600 in cash from the U.S. government from this. All the kids will be getting the full $1,400 as opposed to earlier iterations. You know, when the $1,200 checks went out, I think kids only got $600. So you're going to get $5,600. But that cutoff, like you mentioned, is it falls off the cliff if you make over $80,000. You make $80,000 in one, you get zero. As opposed to earlier iterations where it was closer to, it was at $100,000. And there's a similar dynamic. $75,000 is, up to $75,000, you get the money as an individual. $80,000, nothing. For a family of, for a family, it's $160,000. 17 million people, they suspect, are not going to get payments who got payments last time. The flip side of that is that there's about 20 million adult dependents who will be getting payment checks, but your fewer families are going to get it. Let's put it that way, or individuals. Like I say, 86% of the people before they put that cap on it, it would have been 91% of the people. The IRS is also going to pay a child benefit. Every kid under six gets $3,600 per child. Between 6 and 18, $3,000 per child. And it's going to be spread out over the course of the year. Now, this only exists for a year, but there's a lot of Democrats who want to try and make this permanent. You know, like, we're getting closer to the idea. That's what's fascinating about this whole process over the past year, is that this conversation would have been unimaginable.
Absolutely.
In September of 2019, regardless of who was president, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it would have been unthinkable. The idea that we're even discussing this idea. And by the way, let's not forget Mitt Romney came in. I mean, a Republican came in with a child support bill. This is a new thing. And it's suddenly the idea that the government can do things and that it can provide material support to people. And there are studies coming out. There was one this week that just came out suggesting that there was an experimental program, I think it was in Stockton, California, where they gave $500 a month to
the mayor out there was a real champ. He got unseated in a sort of very sort of controversial race. But go ahead.
Right. Well, he was trying this. I mean, they had, you know, large pockets of poverty in the city, and they decided to do this experimental program. And what ended up happening was, if you gave the $500 a month to families that were suffering from, you know, either at low wage jobs or were unemployed, a lot of dysfunction, it made a huge difference, as one might expect. It's $500 that they didn't have before, but it ended up leading many of them to get full-time jobs and, you know, become more, you know, participate more in, you know, the normal kind of, you know, working and you know, social sort of life that they had been denied. It's just money, you know. I mean, it just turned out that just that little bit of cash, or what we would think of maybe as being a small amount of cash, isn't really that little if you've got rent that, you know, could pay half your rent. I mean, that could make a huge difference. And so these ideas, this kind of thinking, I mean, the fact that the government, and, you know, you have to even look back at the Republicans. I have to say, I was surprised that back in the spring that they came, you know, that they all voted for the original COVID relief plan. I mean, it, you know, that emergency, I think, drove everybody into, you know, sort of, my God, you know, that everything's falling apart here. But on the other hand, you know, they're not usually adverse to making people suffer. And of course, they came out, you know, not shortly after that saying, well, we got to reopen and get businesses going. And they've been very reluctant to do anything since then. But even so, you know, that idea that of relief, and it's not just stuff like tax credits and, you know, we'll give relief to the banks or whatever and we'll do. I mean, there was that aspect of it, the PPE loans, that was a big part of the original COVID relief plan, but direct relief to people, sending them checks, you know, depositing money in their account and saying, here it is, no questions asked. We just need to make sure that people have this money so that A, they can live, and B, that the economy isn't going to completely crater because nobody has any money and nobody's spending. So, I mean, these ideas, I mean, this is real kind of fundamental, hardcore Keynesian economics. You know, when the economy is crashing, the government's job at that point is to intervene and throw money around. It's really not complicated. You just got to get it out there, throw it out. And the American, you know, our economic system is fully capable of doing that. And they did it. So now what we're seeing is this kind of idea, as you point out, that the government has a role to play here in keeping the economy going, in providing relief, in, if anything, this idea that, well, if we give them too much money, they won't work. As it turns out, it looks like it's the opposite. That if people are given, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's sort of you know, priming the pump, I guess, you know, for individuals, not the economy. But as individuals, you get a little money, then you kind of go, okay, maybe I can go out. I remember there was some guy I read the other day who said, I got to take time off of my second job, my second part-time job, to go look for a full-time job. I mean, that's the kind of thing a little money can allow you to do, right?
Right. I mean, well, go on, Sam. Yeah, I mean, to your point about the Republican, the amount of panic in the passage of the CARES Act can't be overstated, and what we were all experiencing. But part of what also made it easier for Republicans to pass that was the amount of giveaways to corporate America, and how we basically, you know, I say that we essentially socialized the stock market and markets for a long time, and allowed that part of our economy to flourish while people were in dire straits. And then they had no problem in waiting until the 11th hour to pass something in December, which was woefully insufficient. But I'm curious what you think the role the media has had in terms of making the Republican position basically untenable when they're trying to oppose this $1.9 trillion stimulus. Because, you know, outside of Ron Johnson, who we covered earlier in the program, it's been pathetic in terms of how their normal opposition, right?
That was pathetic, too.
Right. Well, of course. But in terms of, like, how they usually respond with such strength, with such like vigor and aggressive opposition. It's gross, but they really have no leg to stand on here. And I think part of that is because the media after the Trump era, they don't buy it anymore. They don't buy the Republican BS. Do you see that as well?
Absolutely. I think it's a hugely influential part of this entire argument. They are no longer being taken seriously because they don't behave seriously. They don't have, you know, they are no longer, they used to call themselves fatuously, by the way, the party of ideas, right? But there are no ideas. We know this because when they did the, you know, the convention last summer, they didn't even put out a platform. They just said, we're supporting Donald Trump. And, you know, whatever he wants is fine with us. And, you know, what you see now, I mean, we're here. We've got they are the opposition. And the media, the right wing media, instead of, you know, pumping their people full of stuff about the deficit and about how this is a giveaway to illegal immigrants or whatever. I'm speaking specifically of the COVID relief bill. They're talking about Dr. Seuss. They're talking about Potato Head. I mean, they're 100% in on the culture war. There's nothing serious about it. And that really is an effect, I think, of the Donald Trump era, because he's not serious. He would, you know, he doesn't know what to say about this. He's clueless. He's a culture warrior in chief. And they have adopted that. And I don't think that it's completely because they're dumb or anything. I mean, Ron Johnson is, but I mean, others, I think they have adopted this as their strategy. They really believe that this is the way for them to win. And this is the way for them to keep their people charged up, and that all this stuff about, you know, legislation, you know, that boring legislation stuff or talking about economics or anything like that, that's just a loser for them. No, and it is. I mean, you know, because democratic economics, while wildly imperfect, are way better than anything they ever had to offer.
Well, we were saying this before the show. This show replays at 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. on the Peacock app. It also, obviously, you can see it on demand on YouTube. And there is no time. Essentially, you can access the show at one point or another throughout the day. I'm convinced there's no time that someone could be listening to the sound of my voice, that if you turn on Fox and wait 10 to 15 minutes, that they won't be talking about Dr. Seuss still today.
Well, the new random rush, Sam. Tune into Fox News and see if Dr. Seuss is on.
But the amazing thing is, we are on the precipice of passing a $1.9 trillion bill. It does have some business, some business funding, but the bulk of this bill is states, cities, hospitals, people. There is $40 billion for rental and homeowner assistance payouts. There's $40 billion for childcare. They are expanding Obamacare subsidies so that no one in the country should be paying more than 8.5% of their income. That's not, I mean, it's an inefficient system, but, you know, 8.5% is around what you would pay for taxes to do it. You won't get the same quality of care that you would have under a single payer system. And it should be a little bit less in terms of the income, as far as I'm concerned. But nevertheless, all of these things are happening that would have been considered fully radical by the Republican Party 5 or 6 years ago. And you turn on you look and see any Republican talking anywhere right now, and they are talking about those six books of Dr. Seuss. And that is it. Like when we played that Ron Johnson thing, as muddled and sort of completely nuts and pathetic as it was, I was like, well, he gets points for not doing like a Dr. Seuss rhyme to bring it back to that. And what's interesting to me, and I would say that, yes, Donald Trump, I see Donald Trump as the nail in the coffin of that, because let's be clear. They tried to repeal the ACA. What was it? 50 some odd times during the Obama years. The idea that they didn't have a plan to replace it after years of repeal, of attempting to repeal it. Like when they got into the position where they could actually repeal it, the reason why they didn't repeal it was because, and it was close, they didn't have a plan to replace it. They didn't have anything. And I think like they have been hollowing out even the bad ideas that they had. They've been hollowing out the sort of generation. I mean, the platform, like you say, is the perfect example of it. But in the platform, like, you know, platforms are only so important, but what they do is they cause people to come up with ideas to put into them. And so like the dissolution of it is basically like saying like, there's no currency to that in this. And it's just this two track thing. I mean, you wrote a piece about CPAC this year, and it was in many respects demonstrably different. Like there wasn't, it's always been somewhat performative, but it's usually like performative about like they're pretending they have ideas. And this time it was just sort of just full on performative.
There was nothing there really about, you know, any of the sort of, you know, quasi intellectual sort of ideology that they've been building for the last, you know, 50 years, really. I mean, there was almost nothing of it. And whatever libertarian, which is a, you know, the libertarian strain, particularly at CPAC, had always been very, very strong. You know, Rand Paul and Ron Paul both used to win the straw poll every year. So that was a big part of it. It was a younger crowd. It was usually the sort of, you know, strident young male libertarian types who were heavily present there. This year, there really wasn't any of that. The only aspect of libertarianism that we saw was people, you know, screaming at freedom, you know, Ted Cruz, like a barking seal, screaming freedom on the stage about wearing masks. And that's just own the lib stuff, right? I mean, that's not libertarianism. That's just trolling, you know, other people.
And also, just quickly, in that straw poll, speaking of Ted Cruz, I mean, even his brand, like the libertarians would always win at CPAC. But even like Ted Cruz's brand of conservatism of, you know, whatever, I guess appealing to evangelicals in many ways, like that hasn't been winning out. It's all just if you're in Trump's orbit.
Absolutely. And of course, on the evangelical side, you know, that's mostly in Trump's orbit now, too. I mean, it just none of that, you know, it's all just this, as you say, performative. And the performance is this red meat culture war, you know, just kind of, you know, trolling and owning the libs. And this seems to be the only, I mean, maybe this is just a transitional period for them. It's something that they don't know what to do with themselves after Donald Trump. But honestly, that their ideological framework just really isn't relevant to anything. And even Donald Trump and even some of the, you know, like Josh Hawley and some of the other sort of modern, you know, Republican, you know, comers in the party, or even Ron DeSantis, I think he's probably the best Trump 2.0 example that we can think of. They just are not on that ideological track that used to be. And of course, the Never Trumpers, they're kind of stuck out there. They kind of probably do have that ideology, but on a political level, and their sense of the threat to democracy that a sort of a white nationalist, you know, demagogic, you know, party, which is what the Republicans are becoming. They don't want any part of that. So you're finding that there just isn't really much there. I guess what I'm saying is it's all froth. And however, I do want to point out that there is another side that is not present. But if you want to look at, you know, what is happening, you know, apparently, you know, with what happened, what yesterday, the March 4th thing, where they thought that the militias and whatever were going to blow up the Capitol. I mean, obviously that didn't happen, but those groups have all gone underground. The more violent kind of, you know, they're not about owning the libs. I mean, of course they love to own the libs, but that's not their purpose. They are truly now violent, anti-government, white nationalist movement within this bigger group of Dr. Seuss haters, you know, or lovers. I guess it's Dr. Seuss lovers. You know, so that group is still out there. And I think what we're going to see is the immigration issue is probably going to be the one that spurs them on to some, if something happens, to some form of violence. I mean, we saw that in El Paso. We saw it throughout the Trump years, the lone wolf, you know, anti-immigrant white nationalists shooting something up. But that's where I think, you know, we shouldn't take our eye off the ball and just assume that this, you know, this group, this what the Republican Party and the Trump movement has become, the MAGA people, are just a bunch of clowns. They are clowns, but there's a whole layer underneath that that still presents a tremendous threat, I think, to democracy.
And I want to just put a pin in that for one moment, because the all that said, that doesn't mean that they're not going to win more elections going forward. I mean, that is part of the problem. But let me circle back to that in a moment, because all I can think of is Josh Hawley coming up on that stage and going like, you guys are supposed to be canceled. We're all canceled. I mean, the aggrievement, this is the thing. The aggrievement has always been there. And certainly, you and I have been, having these conversations for over a decade now, almost two. Josh Hawley, incidentally, just voted against the $15 minimum wage. He's a populist.
Mr. Populist.
And the aggrievement has always been there. I remember talking about the aggrievement in 2005. And, my go-to joke was like, what do you get with a Republican without, the aggrievement is just basically a 5 o'clock shadow. The best way I can explain it is sort of like looking at like an actor like Al Pacino at this point. Maybe this is unfair. I don't want people to get upset. Or Robert De Niro, where as an actor, they always, when you start out, you're really focused and you get involved and you have a couple of crutches that you go to, a couple of looks, a couple of turns of phrases, maybe the way that you have a lilt, that's your hook. And as you get older, you see with these actors is like all of the sort of like real hard work that they're doing, you back off a little bit and the lilt is there. And then, at one point they become almost like a representation of a characterization of themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what's sort of happened with the Republican Party. Like everything has dropped out. Even though it wasn't necessarily substantive, but everything has dropped out and they've just inflated those really low hanging crutches. And, it's going to be interesting to see if they can pivot. It's not that hard to pivot to the anti-immigration stuff. I mean, you're already starting to see them do this, Judge Jeanine is, yelling and screaming. They're saying in Texas that the COVID problem has nothing to do with us having no mask mandates or opening up all the restaurants, has to do with the Mexican immigrants. And so we're seeing that dynamic, but let's just pivot for a moment to this question of them winning elections. In the past couple of days, we have seen Georgia basically enact a new Jim Crow set of voting laws. We're seeing it in I don't know, half a dozen other states just in the past like month. The first thing these Republicans do when they come in, if they've got a Republican governor, Republican legislature, is they start to inhibit voting rights. And we know that the Senate is anti-democratic in the sense that 40% of the nation can control more than 50% of the votes in the Senate because of the way that the Senate is configured and all of this gerrymandering. So we have this weird dynamic where on a policy level, the Democrats are able to sort of basically own the playing field because these guys are in the stands, dressed up as in some weird costume.
Yeah.
They're just like, they're the mascots. Like I'm wearing the banana suit and appealing to the people in the crowds, but like they're not on the field. But from an electoral standpoint, they have a built-in advantage that Democrats need to overcome. So the question becomes like, what do the Democrats do with this sort of like sole position on the playing field? And it's almost like the one thing they got to do is just take the bolt cutters, get into the stadium, and that is the filibuster, right? And they've just introduced HR1, which is a massive voting bill. And that seems to be the one that if they don't break the filibuster for this, it's not going to happen. Roll it up. Everybody, we'll see you at the next couple of reconciliation bills, but then we're done.
Oh, absolutely. That I wrote about this today for Salon. The HR1 is an existential bill for the Democrats. And, you know, I don't know if they know this. I don't know. I assume that they do. They're not, you know, complete idiots. What's happening around the country is a massive program to roll back voting rights on a level we have not seen in many, many decades. Now, some of this stems from the 2013 Supreme Court decision to kind of gut the Voting Rights Act to begin with. Hey, we've always, yeah, everything's fine now. We don't need this anymore. No more federal involvement. And so there's been this move, which is part of what spurred the HR1 in the first place. It was passed in the last Congress, but of course it sat on the desk of Mitch McConnell and never went anywhere in the Senate. But they reintroduced it. The House just passed it, and now the Senate is looking at it. And what it does, it is a massive voting rights act, voting rights bill, hugely, you know, overdue. It tackles campaign finance. It tackles gerrymandering. It tackles, you know, voting rights and various, you know, other things that are fundamentally important in light, particularly now in light of what's going on in the wake of the 2020 election and Donald Trump's big lie about the stolen election. They are using that as an excuse to just go in and absolutely overturn every, you know, voting law, voting expansion that they can in all these Republican places. Now, when you put that on top of the things you mentioned, the Senate already, the Democrats, we have a 50-50 Senate, but the Democrats represent 41 million more people than Republicans do. That doesn't seem like a democracy to me, but hey, you know, I guess this is what we do. We know about the Electoral College. We already know that, you know, I mean, the last two, you know, we've had two in the last 20 years where someone who lost the popular vote actually won the Electoral College. It was just this close this time, even though Donald Trump lost by 7 million votes, that he might have been able to, you know, eke out that win in the Electoral College again. So we know how undemocratic that is. We know that the gerrymandering, they've done studies over and over again. It almost always benefits Republicans, the way they cluster people into certain, you know, into certain districts. They end up gaining seats and they have way more. Here's, you know, this is the one that gets me. The Republicans have lost six out of the last seven popular votes for president, and yet they have six Supreme Court justices on the court. I mean, that is just, there was no mandate for that. We all know the drama and the Sturm und Drang that we went through over the Supreme Court justices over the past 5 years. But this is, we are in big, big trouble here. If we don't fix this voting situation, our electoral system, they are going to manipulate this to the extent that it's going to be impossible to fix it. What happens if they don't get this done, 2022, we may very well be looking at, you know, I mean, it's a very thin margin. The Democrats might not win. This window is just very, very small to fix this problem. There's another bill coming down the pike, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which is coming through, which also, you know, looks at a lot of this stuff. You know, Ronald Brownstein, the analyst for The Atlantic and CNN, smart guy, he wrote a long piece this week that just absolutely sent a chill down my spine. I mean, he went through all these details and he just said, you know, basically said, this is an existential question, not just for the Democratic Party, but for the country. Because think about what we've just been talking about. We've got a bunch of clowns in hot dog suits sitting up in the stands. We've got militias running around. We have Donald Trump doing God knows what. If that party, that's the party we're talking about, this Dr. Seuss, you know, militia, evangelical Donald Trump MAGA party, if they have power in this country for the next decade, which could happen due to gerrymandering and, you know, all the rest of this, and they pass all these laws, I just don't know what will happen to the country. The democracy is seriously in danger of being lost I hate to sound hysterical, but I kind of am because I think it's that important. And here we have people dancing around the filibuster, you know, Kyrsten Sinema, Joe Manchin, and maybe Dianne Feinstein. Well, I just don't really know. I'm sorry. This is it. I mean, I don't know if they can craft some filibuster exception for voting rights or find some way to do it. They have no choice. They have got to do that. There is no choice. If they don't, they're signing their own death warrant and the death warrant for our democracy in the process. This is ridiculous. And I don't even know why we're we have to talk about this. The end of my piece today was, you know, if Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin want to end up being remembered as the Strom Thurmonds of their day, they will block this. They will refuse to cooperate. And I'm just fingers crossed that somebody's got the clout with those two or anybody else who's in this. I mean, we don't know how many are wobbling on the filibuster, but it's got to be done. I mean, I'm for getting rid of it altogether. But yeah, in this particular bill, if this is all they can do is just get this bill through, you know, eliminate the filibuster and we'll deal with other issues as they come down the pike. Okay, you know, whatever. But this one has to pass. It just has to, or we're dead.
Well, I mean, I'm curious too, because we're talking about how Republicans are their response to this COVID relief bill has been so weak and it hasn't been able to get any traction. I don't see how they're able to weaponize the elimination of the filibuster in any real way if Democrats choose to go forward with this. I just think it's a fear based on old playbooks and old media responses that just aren't good. Like we just talked about, it's not going to play in the same way that it traditionally would have with the Beltway media.
I agree with that. And I, you know, your point is really true. The media is different now than it was. I mean, we still see both sides and we still see, you know, there's still plenty to complain about. But what you're talking about, this idea that they would naturally assume that something like the deficit or something like the filibuster, that these things were just sacrosanct and there's no way that you could possibly suggest that those things were not vitally important to the American people. I remember back when they were talking about the Obamacare during that, you know, I guess it was during the first year of the Obama administration when they were saying, well, these people, these fabulously wealthy TV celebrities, you know, who are, you know, had their own programs would come on and go, well, the American people are just going to have to take their medicine. It's time for them to understand that there's no free lunch. You know, I mean, they would say this stuff and I'd just be sitting there appalled going, who are you to be lecturing the American people about their medicine and what they have to take? And I'm not seeing that. I mean, to be honest, I mean, I'm just not. And I don't know whether or not this is some kind of that they've learned something about economics in the intervening years, but I kind of doubt it. What has happened is that hold, that beltway hold on these sort of shibboleths, you know, it's just Donald Trump came in and exploded that stuff. And some of it is kind of, you know, falling back. There's still habits, the grooves that they sort of fit themselves into. But you're right. You know, the idea that they would, you know, that they would take the side of, and it's vitally important that they do, right? I mean, if the Beltway media, along with the right-wing media, doesn't back something like you cannot eliminate the filibuster, you're destroying the very foundation of our system if you do that. If they don't do that, then it's no longer considered conventional wisdom. And that's what usually gets these people over. And so you're absolutely right. It's an important aspect of this that, you know, we shouldn't overlook. I mean, it's a new climate in the media for sure.
And just to end it, I'm not sure that the media has changed as much as the fact that there's just simply no Republican that they can turn to and say, like the old, you know, some people say type of thing. Well, now they look back behind their shoulders and they're like, there's nobody there.
Yeah.
it's just like John Thune making an argument that he only got paid $24 an hour when he was a kid. So why do you need 15 today? Heather Parton Digby, always a pleasure. Folks can always check out your writing at salon.com or at your Uber blog, Hullabaloo. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thanks so much for having me.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. We'll be right back. So we got an IM from a listener during the show at 10:49 a.m. Central Time, who said they wanted to test the proposition that they could tune in to Fox. And sure enough, they watched Outnumbered and they were talking about Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss. Random Dr. Seuss.
Random Dr. Seuss. Could be. We could build a whole media empire around that. Folks, that's it for us for the first hour. Remember, we replay on the Choice channel on the Peacock app. You can see us at 5 and 10 p.m. daily. And we will be back Monday. We'll have a better sense of what the end up, what this bill ended up being. And hopefully it'll be passed and signed by Joe Biden by the time we talk on Monday. Get that unemployment benefits out to people. They are going to need them very quickly. And this system is a little bit creaky, doesn't get it to folks in time. We will see you then. And we will see you now. That's the way it
Hello.
Works. Yep. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a, I know Andy Kindler is here. We're going to take a quick break because I just got to run and grab some paperwork before Mr. Kindler comes here.
Paperwork? And then,
what?
Paperwork.
Paperwork, yeah.
Okay.
I got to get some, would you want to event? Why don't you, Emma, you welcome Andy Kindler to the show and I'm going to go grab some paperwork. How's that?
I mean, I was going to use this opportunity to take my little break, but yeah, I'll hold down the fort.
I can play.
No, it's fine. I don't care.
Yeah, play. Just no, we're not going to go to the fun half. Let's just play some break music. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Andy, we're just going to put you on hold.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Why would anybody put?
Why would you put me on?
Emma will be rejoining in a moment. In the meantime, it is always a pleasure to welcome to the program this guy who is often represented by this song.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, and he believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, and a kid .com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your theme song, Andy Kindler.
Andy Kindler.
Still gets me. That makes me cry. It makes me tear up. Even though it's a very anti-Semitic song.
Is it an anti-Semitic song? Why is it?
No, I think it celebrates our people.
I love what you have done with your background for, you know, it's been a year almost. We're coming up almost exactly on a year of being sort of quarantined, you know, right. More or less. And after a year, what you have done with your whole Zoom background. Yep. I know you do a podcast. I'm sure you're doing live comedy shows online, and look at the amount of effort that you seem to have put in is really, really impressive.
Well, the thing that's sad about it is that's actually a virtual background.
that's
in lieu. That's one of my the ones I choose when I want to go crazy behind me.
Did you pay a graphic artist to create that?
Yeah, but should I have a painting or something? A painting of me? I could do that.
I mean, you should. I'll tell you something. Putting a painting of you behind you would be awesome.
Okay, I think I'll do that. But then you're acting as if my career's on the upswing. I'm thinking I'm wrapping it all up and I'm in a bunker now. You know what I'm saying? I'm hiding is what I'm doing.
Well,
hey, by the way, I like when I say I'm going to be on the show. And then the so many of the wonderful listeners to the show go, thanks for the warning. I won't. Now, come on. What are these people? What are they related to my father?
Maybe it's your father has a bunch of like sock puppets.
Little burners. I mean, burners.
Yeah, but I mean, I say to my dad, see you later. He goes, not if I see you first. And now I got all the people from Majority Report going, I'll be on soon. Well, we won't be there, jerky.
Well,
they don't call me jerky.
First off, I mean, that's not all the people. I mean, there's has to be somebody listening.
There has to be somebody who doesn't call me a boomer. Hey, boomer, Obama apologist. Actually, no, I am making money as an Obama apologist. I tour about 3 months a year.
That's impressive. He's been out of office for so long that.
I got to look. Cut him a slack is one of my Uh-oh. Did it get dark? Am I dying?
What's going on?
I have a light. This is lit, too, Sam.
Oh, it is? Do you have a strobe light going off?
No. You know, I know that we like to joke about me because my microphone is wooden. Like my teeth. So far, I haven't been funny on the show. But, you know, I didn't prepare today. I didn't go look around. Dennis Miller's not still around.
I know it.
Who's going to be our new guy that we go to? Is it Ben Shapiro's very funny. Are we going to be critiquing his act?
Limbaugh's dead. There's
what?
Just not. Yeah. Did you not know that?
Oh, you know who's hilarious is Mark Levin. If he sounds like an evil Don Adams.
That's true.
And he looks like an evil Rob Reiner.
The problem is that that's practically saying he's an evil Don Adams is practically a Dennis Miller bit.
Mr. Producer, cut 7. Go. I used to listen to that horrible show.
I
keep myself awake, just to get over the 4 or 5.
Are you doing, I know that like some folks are just starting to do, some comedians are.
Thank you for including me.
Yes. Are starting to do outdoor shows.
Yeah.
Spoke to our friend Sarah Silverman. She did an outdoor show. She said it was weird, but she was rusty. Have you done anything like that?
No, because first of all, I can't tell the difference between now and before the quarantine. I get the same amount of work. It seems to be I never did well in clubs. And the thing is, I won't even
same
go.
Same amount of people in the clubs when you show up.
Same, yeah, that's right. always, as you say, at Andy Kindler's show, I was on. Remember when I did my half a house tour? 30 people can't be wrong. 30. Andy Kindler's half a house tour. 12 people. Hey, every Wednesday it's ladies night. Ladies, feel free to put your clothing on the empty seats next to you at the Andy Kindler show.
I won't even
go outdoor dining.
You were doing social distancing at your shows well before the.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. I have a friend who has myasthenia gravis, and this is true, and he's in remission.
I don't know what that means.
Myasthenia gravis is a muscle disease, and I had never heard about it before. And it makes your face is blank. You can't make expressions. It used to be very dangerous. Isn't it amazing that what are the odds that half the people have been seeing my shows for the last 30 years suffer from myasthenia gravis? Maybe I've been killing.
Does that over well in the department at the hospital?
Okay. Also, other symptoms of myasthenia gravis include craning your neck around involuntarily to see who might be laughing behind you, looking at your watch a lot, googling nearest comedy club. Now, this is not. I don't make this stuff up, folks.
Yes, you do. That is actually you. Literally do.
This is Emma. This is. Does it not? Do I not scream casual Friday when you see me.
Yeah, again, though, I mean, the stark background, it's to be more casual, you've got to have, like, McDonald's wrappers behind you, etc.
I am not going to have a background until there's a $15 an hour minimum wage in this country, because I'm not spending one cent. Is any of this working? I'm not spending $1 if I can't, if poor people don't have a good background.
All right.
I mean, that's nice. Yeah, I mean,
that's
right.
No, that's good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but so are you doing like, aren't you doing like any of those, you know?
Oh, yeah, I do some of those things, but I don't miss. Here's the thing, Sam. I don't wake up every day and go, oh, we got to get back out in the boards. I don't miss stand up. Also, the last thing I want to do is I released Hence the Humor, which was a very funny album, according to me. And, no longer will I ever be in the back of a club if someone brings up their germ-filled vinyl album that want for me to sell, you know, to sign. I will never be near people. I will never get on a plane again. I will never be in the same room with people.
Come on. Why is that? Did you get vaccinated yet?
No. And thank you. For the first time in my life, I'm not happy at being 64. Thank you, aging people. I got to sit around and watch people like my wife get vaccinated. I'm 64.
Soon. That is a hard situation. I have like everyone around me has gotten vaccinated. My ex went and got an extra vaccine at some of the distribution places at the end
just
of the day.
Just to spite you?
I mean, I think there was probably a certain amount of that, but also
I make you cry with my material.
Yeah, my friend John Benjamin's the only person I have any real sort of like in person contact that's not between a big plastic tarp.
That's me. I'm between the plastic. You got
between two plastic tarps.
My sister was able to, when you take someone over the age of 75 in Massachusetts, you can get a shot. And so now, like, it creates a certain amount of anxiety.
Well, I have the shingles vaccine, so I'm...
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I gotta get that, too.
You do have to get that because you don't want to get shingles.
Yes. A buddy of mine got it, and he said, you gotta get the vaccine. Yeah.
I don't think I gotta worry about that for a little while.
You got a while.
You're young, you kids.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to. Sam always uses a lot of Emma's young jokes, so I'm trying to ramp up he's old jokes, but it feels mean.
No, it's not mean. I gotta get used to it.
Emma, you don't remember anything past The Daily Show.
Exactly.
No, I don't.
Older than the Trevor. You don't remember anything older than the Trevor Noah's Daily Show.
Well, I choose not to remember much of Trevor Noah's material.
What? I can't. Yeah. Come on. Step aside, edgy people. We're back.
All right. Well, now, Andy, okay. I don't know.
You can't get rid of me this quick. That's
not
no,
no.
Fact.
I'm not getting rid
That's
of
not
you
a quick. Casual fun
no,
Friday.
I've been trying to sort of build up to this. We have to deal with an elephant in the room.
And not my career?
No.
Are you talking about Jay?
Yes. Yes.
No, this is not a true story, right?
It is a true story.
No, it's not a true story.
It is a true story. It is a true story.
I am real. I could almost cry if you're really telling me it's true.
I am telling you the truth. It is.
He's doing a sketch. He's doing a sketch for our Bob's Burgers.
I honestly like. All right. People don't know what we're talking about. But you and I know what we're talking about. But he's been trending on Twitter. So, I mean, it's public. So we get.
Oh, man. I can't even understand it. I've been in the room with him for many, many times. He never brought up. Hey, Andy, by the way, did you get my email about I sent
so
you
let me,
about
let me
Lyndon LaRouche?
Let me set the table here.
Okay.
For those people who don't know, Andy Kindler is the second best voice artist on this Zoom call right now.
Who's the first? Who's the yeah. Emma? Emma, you're on Bob's Burgers, Emma?
No, I'm
Andy Kindler.
I'm Family Guy.
No, I'm
Family Guy. Hey, where'd that guy come up with his ideas except every other cartoon? All right, sorry.
So Andy and I.
Okay, well, I'm not sorry. We won't get into the Family Guy.
That's my boss you're talking about.
I pulled the mic out of my head.
I'm sorry.
Andy, you and I have known each other for 25 years.
When was pilot season and all that stuff? What year?
Who's the Caboose was 96. So it's been probably, 26 years. And when we started out, or when I started out, I mean, you had been in the business for about 30, 40 years.
I'm so old. It really is. I'm the oldest person. I don't know. Even Lewis Black called me and said that he's somehow younger than me.
No, he's not. That scene in LA in like 94, 95, there was a lot of, some people from Boston had come, people from all over the country, obviously out in LA. And there was the alternative comedy scene. And that's, I sort of met you through some of those people, probably from Sarah Silverman or something. And through the years, we've worked on some things together, not many, yes, but a little bit. We are now both on Bob's Burgers. You have a bigger role.
That's not what it's about. How well my pension's doing.
No, it's you have a bigger role, at least in terms of time, but I'm not sure in terms of importance of the show. But nonetheless, you play Mort.
We'll be back with more backhanded compliments after these messages.
You play Mort.
Mort the Mortician.
I play Hugo. Amongst many, many other characters.
I only play one character. I could do a Jew, or I could do an older Jew. That's all I do.
I have more or less. That's my range too. It's just I was able. Like if I do this, I can do one.
I know,
other
but you look Italian. You could pass as Italian.
Well, but it's animated
again.
It's animated.
No, but I mean, in real life, you could hide as Italian. I'll convince people.
I don't know about that, but that's not the point. So,
that is the point, right?
Last night, this started going around in some of our circle of friends, some of the, we're friends with this whole group of a generation of comedians who are, more or less between our ages, maybe a little bit younger than us, too.
Mr. Show was part of the Show. I was in the audience of Mr. Show.
I was watching the
person that we're talking about.
Right. Yeah. And in Mr. Show, obviously Bob Odenkirk, David Cross, David and I had worked together in Boston before Mr. Show. And so I was out there and John Ennis was in Mr. Show. And there was a couple other people who were like, Paul Tompkins was sort of around. I don't know if he was in Mr. Show.
He actually emceed some of them. He was hilarious. And he was in it too.
Let's play a clip. We have Sarah would sometimes do Mr. Show and who else? There was a couple other people, Tom Kenny. I mean, people would drop in sort of
Mary Lynn Rice Cub
and
Jill Talley, Tom Kenny.
Oh, exactly.
That's
exactly.
Right. Tom Kenny and Jill Talley.
All right, play a little brilliant clip of Mr. Show.
I was never in Mr. Show. Sorry.
I was not.
Stenson's Maelstrom cost a little more, but saves a lot of time.
That's David Cross's voice.
If you've never seen the show, you should check it out. It's a very funny show.
Are you a two-jar slave? Well, thanks to Vonnie's, you don't have to take it anymore. Now, there's new Vonnie's mustard eggs.
Look at that guy carefully. Look at that guy carefully.
Let's get the hell out of here.
Mustard Mayonnaise combines the spicy goodness of mustard with the creamy richness of mayonnaise.
Okay, there you go. Very funny show. And we would go see it live. Go live. This is obviously they would do some, but at one point it was also live. And so that guy who was just shooting people with the machine gun is Jay Johnstone. He also plays a role in Bob's Burgers. Yeah.
He's Jimmy Pesto.
Jimmy Pesto, who is a rival restaurant owner to Bob.
He's very funny. He's very, very funny.
Very funny guy. And so this picture goes around on Twitter last night. This tweet.
Oh,
The FBI is still seeking information on people who took part in the violence at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. If you know this individual, visit tips.fbi.gov. Refer to photo 247 in your tip.
I just know I'm going to be punked on this later or something.
No, I mean, he's trending. Isn't he? Is he still trending?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure he is. Oh, I don't know. But
Brendan, check out, see if he's trending. It's Jay. And apparently he fell in with, like, I think Proud Boys or Proud Boy adjacent stuff. And nobody
could have ever in a million years would have thought this was true.
I mean, I don't have any particular insights into this. Jimmy Pesto is trending. I mean,
Buckingham Knicks was involved in something. See how funny I am. Buckingham Palace. All of a sudden I say Buckingham Knicks. It's a group that existed before Fleetwood Mac. Good night, everybody, please.
I mean, it's bizarre. It's just absolutely bizarre. And the amazing thing is, like, if I was to ever imagine.
Oh, I know him from the Sarah Silverman program. That's how I know him.
Yep. He's in Sarah's show.
I've known him as long as I've known. He did a show with Paul F. Tompkins in the 90s. That was brilliant.
Yep. They were a comedy duo during that time.
Yeah.
And I think they both were writers on Mr. Show. And, you know, if you imagine Bob and Dave getting together to do a Mr. Show reunion, it is so easy for me to imagine them doing a sketch where one of their fellow performers had been part of storming the Capitol.
That's right. Totally.
Totally.
Well, you know, he's somebody who I just assume that everybody that I am friends with, we have the same politics. I mean, the certain baseline of politics, you know. I've never talked about politics with him. I just cannot imagine this on any level at all, how this would have happened, you know, like I say, outside of a sketch. It's just shocking to me.
I think everybody, I mean, I know everybody associated with, you know, Bob's Burgers was in complete shock from this.
Now, not everybody called up like Sam and inquired as to who was going to play the Jimmy Pesto role. Was just something that Sam did just to say, he just wants to make sure everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, that's not the solution. Here is the solution that I came up with.
Bob, I just shut down Jimmy Pesto's. Yes, he had multiple violations. Rat feces, mouse feces, cat feces, dog feces.
There you go. And not feces.
The sad thing is that this has been on Sam's answering machine since 1997.
Well, no, I have one for every character.
Hi, I'm Andy Kindler. You may know me as Mort the Mortician of Bob's Burgers. I'm not here right now.
I came up with, like, Hugo excuses as to why every character is off, just as a way to sort of write my character in to explain why. So,
you do a lot, this is true. You send a lot of edible gift baskets over there, don't you?
That's right. Of course. Yeah. No, Bob, I'm sorry, but I've shut down Mort the Mortician's place.
You notice how Sam got a little stiff there. See, just, you know what I'm saying? I'm just joking.
I saw it.
There was no,
but it's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, this is really strange. I think, like, it's more painful for, I mean, I haven't talked to him in years and years. I mean, I hadn't done these scenes with him and certainly hadn't seen him in, you know, cause you guys do it in LA. We do it in New York.
Kind of do it over there, but this is really the center of of show business.
Well, yeah, no, I understand that, but it's just, it's so bizarre.
No, this is really terrible because I can't imagine, you know, I spent 4 years going, I can't imagine, you know, how he could have gotten one vote, how anybody would have, you know, the birther in it. So I couldn't imagine anybody I know ending up there.
It's one thing to be a Trump supporter, right? I mean, you had millions of people who voted for Donald Trump.
But nobody I know, not one person I know, I'll have one person in my family. I was watching something on people do, I guess a lot of people do have a person in their family who's, but I'm very Jewish and we don't allow conservative people around. Unless it's Netanyahu.
It's another to think like I'm going to like to buy into the notion. I mean, this is the thing that I'm really curious about. Does Jay believe that the election was stolen?
Well, here's the thing. You would never. I'm the kind of person who gets on everyone's nerves because I really do get. And I'm less this way than I used to be. I used to argue with everybody until I got into therapy and realized that the person I'm arguing with, Andy, that person you're arguing is probably not your father. Your father passed away a few years ago, right. And there's no reason for you to recreate this argument with him online. But I mean, this just absolutely. So he's a guy who's always been so sweet.
Yes.
And you just never. It's not like he's, you know, like someone's hiding there and all of a sudden you found out they were like Perot supporters. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, I'm just speculating, but like a lot of it's just you can get down a conspiracy wormhole sometimes. I mean, maybe that's what
you can.
It is. Maybe that's what it is.
Well, you know,
I guess I am speculating, but I meant.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, I mean, that is the thing. I mean, it's very possible, but it's also like, what are the pressures on him to react to that conspiracy? I mean, the idea that like, he's out I find it fascinating.
Maybe he wanted to meet the shaman guy because that guy's pretty good. That shaman guy.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not a big fan of people who take concepts from cultures and co-opt them for horrible.
Yeah.
But in his case, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
When
you know,
he's screaming up there when he just kept screaming. Now
ever have any indication that Jay like was involved? I mean, because this is not like I could see like, you know, you're a Trump supporter. Maybe you're not going to talk about it, but you're this adamant that you are going to storm the Capitol. And we don't know, to be fair, like, look, there's a picture of him. We don't know if he was. We just know the FBI is looking for him. There's they could be looking for 1,000 people.
The last thing you'll ever hear, I would jump off a building. I would jump off. Forget about the time when 8 people got my phone number. I would jump off a building if the FBI was looking for me.
I mean, we just
because I was involved in the MK Ultra stuff.
Don't say that because the FBI, that's what the FBI would want.
Let me finish. That's exactly. If I see him, I will report him immediately.
No, but I mean, if you're off a building, that could have been the FBI's doing.
That's true. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about my MK Ultra days.
I just am. I honestly can't come up with.
Well, Tim, you know Tim Heidecker, right?
Ugh. Yes.
Oh. Okay. I didn't know you had a problem with him.
Oh my God! Do you see the offensive stuff he puts out about me? Pull
are
up what
serious?
He put up today. Yeah. Look at this.
No, this is a joke now. Are you guys punking me?
One sec.
No, Tim Heidecker is just completely out of control.
See, I thought he was always he was kidding. So when he said, yeah, I think it's Jay, I thought he was, his whole thing was Tim and Eric were jokesters.
I mean, do you find this funny? Look at what
I found it anti-Semitic. I don't know.
Look at what he's putting around right now about me. Look at that. He put
something
about
that. Yeah.
Cedars.
Oh, he's fucking around. You guys are fucking around.
That is like Stan Cedar. I don't know.
Is this whole thing a prank now where I'm going to come around and now Jay Johnston's going to hop out from behind the curtain? I'm the last person in America who actually thinks that was Jay Johnston, I bet.
I mean, I don't know what Tim Heidecker's up to. I have no idea what that guy, but.
No, he said that he said he confirmed that he was there. He said, but I thought he was kidding around.
I don't think so. No.
Oh. Well,
so strange.
Talk about Andy Kaufman. It's like, remember Andy Kaufman when he did a lot of right wing bits?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what Jay was doing? I don't think so.
No,
I feel
don't.
Like you would have put that on YouTube as soon as you get back. I mean, that's the thing is that like, I was like, could he try and make the argument that he was just there doing a bit? But like, why didn't he put out a video?
Yeah. But how do you arrive? How do you arrive? It's like, you can't like, okay, you know what? Later in life, I started listening to some of the Nazi speeches and I didn't agree with all of it. But you know, I mean, how do you go that direction? I mean, I understand Dennis Miller, who was always a jerk and a mean guy, but that's why I just think I'm being punked, or we're all being punked.
I don't have a sense of who knew, and I haven't had a chance really for, to talk to anybody, you know, that in the L.A. circle of his friends. Nobody in New York who you worked with him, you know, was even like, you know, would have these type of incidental, you know. But I'm curious if people had a sense of like, I mean, how much of a sort of double life, because you don't just show up there like, you know, in December, you know, I was like, I was contemplating voting for Biden. And then like, I saw what happened in Georgia and I'm like, this is stolen and somebody has to do something about it. And I just got on a plane. It was sort of, I just got wrapped up in the moment. Like this is this, he had to have been in an ongoing sort of like drama or relationship with this. And,
but also never talked about it. I never heard anything political from him ever.
No, you know? I mean, that's the thing. He must have been living basically if not a secret life. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know. I don't know him enough to know. And you know, when I would go in, people knew that I was worked in politics, you know, talking about politics professionally.
But everybody had the same politics at that show. I mean, I'm not saying there's not a secret, anarcho. What do they call? They try to call the, I like the show called I Don't Speak German. If you ever get a chance to hear it, it's a podcast where they show you how everybody on the right wing are not, you know, how it gets back to Nazis all the time. Right.
I don't know if that's healthy for you to listen to.
Oh, no. More Nazis. I've watched Hitler in Color. My favorite one is still out there, folks. It's called High Hitler. High Hitler is an actual documentary about Hitler and his drug problems. Like, really? we need a catchy title to get people to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard about that.
Because he took all those drugs. High Hitler. I'm telling you, Hitler's numbers are down and they need to find ways that would make it more but you know,
what people don't know about Hitler is that, you know, he was a pretty fun hang when he got stoned.
Look, Hitler, at least he served, right? He was in the armed forces. Hitler was injured in World War I. So, you know, when you compare him to Trump, I mean, at least Hitler walked the walk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, he really, yeah. Did you know there was a British sitcom, I think this is probably 20 years old now, called Heil Honey, I'm Home. And it was, maybe it was 25 years ago. And it was, Hitler was living, and Eva Braun were living in a flat. Like, it was sort of like based on I Love Lucy. And it was Hitler and Eva Braun were living, and they had neighbors who were always like, this is like, ostensibly during like World War II or something.
Sounds like the producers.
Yeah, I mean, it was.
Goebbels lives next door.
No, because it was in Britain, so they were just there. They were like the kooky couple who was like, "What are these guys doing?"
I know. I just wonder what like the Fred and Ethel dynamic.
Fred and Ethel were British, and so
so like a culture clash.
There was a little bit of culture clash, like and that was the whole thing with like, you know. Desi Arnaz was, you know, the spicy Cuban who had moved in right. Next door, you know.
Right.
And so I can't remember. It wasn't on for very long, oddly. but I mean, that's I do remember that show. I mean, it's I don't know. I guess I'm still in a sort of like a slight state of shock.
About
Jay.
Right. I know. I was pretending that I didn't know what it was. I'm still upset about David Mamet. I mean, not that he was, I still can't believe it. I mean, not that I knew what his politics were either, but just when he went right wing, I just was like,
oh, I think he was always a very odd guy. In fact, I had years ago in Boston, again, like in late 90s, I had friends who.
He was on Dr. Katz, by the way.
Yeah, he was in that. He knew some people. He was like adjacent. He was in Cambridge. I mean, he knew
Jonathan Katz.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
And I happened to be having dinner with some family that he was family friends with, and they were over there. And I was listening to this guy talk, and I'm like, oh my God.
This is way before that?
This is in the mid 90s. And I'm like, he's a lunatic. I know he wasn't. I mean, it was he was a lunatic.
I like State and Maine, though.
There's, you know, he had some decent work.
But I know, but it's just like he's so I always get surprised. It's like Ron Silver. Remember Ron?
I'm not surprised about that. I used to debate Ron Silver I had a big argument with Ron Silver on the at the GOP convention on Scarborough Country about the invasion of Iraq.
Oh no, Scarborough Country. Wow. About what was the argument?
About Iraq.
And he'd be like a moderate. He'd be like a moderate. He wouldn't even get on Fox News today.
No.
He'd be too reasonable. He'd be more. He'd be like he'd have to replace the. They still have quote liberals on there.
Like Alan Combs. Well, I mean,
He's dead.
Glenn Greenwald.
Juan.
Nomi's on today.
Oh, is she on Fox today?
Well, she texted me about whether what Dr. Seuss puns she should pull out.
Oh my god.
Oh, I got sad about that. You know what? When you go back into history and you read, the best you can find is someone who goes, I wasn't anti-Semitic, but I did find the Jews annoying. I mean, these people, there's so much just baseline anti-Semitism. What happened? What did we do? Is it because we were in the money business? What was it? Is it my looks? Is it the horns?
I'm not convinced that these segments don't spur a lot of it.
Why? Because we're both Jewish or something? Or
just the way that we act.
We're very Jewish. They say cast right Yiddish, cast British. That's why I think you had a better chance because you're a handsome Jew. I've always said that.
I read a little bit not Jewish.
Number one.
Is that why you hired me, Sam? Just kind of balance it out?
Yeah.
You don't know what went on previous to you coming here. The Ava Braun years. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm trying to cause trouble.
But Andy, so what do you have planned?
Oh, come Fox on.
Viral?
Can you say it more? Can you say it more sarcastic? I have a great podcast. It's called Thought Spiral. Two Jews, 2 hours, two microphones.
Lots of neuroses.
No guests. There's no guests. It's all me talking about my therapy, talking about how people don't like me.
Are you doing your therapy over Zoom?
Yes, and I love it so much. I love it so much.
It's a lot easier than going to the, I don't really want to go back, to be honest with you.
At first, I was very sad about it because I didn't feel like, but once I went on the Zoom, I could see what she's thinking because I'm always like, what did I do now? What did I do now?
You're like closer to her, so I can tell when she zones out too, which I like.
I'm twice a week. I'm the oldest Jew to enter therapy at the age of 59. I got into therapy. Wow. It's been the greatest
good for you
thing of my whole life because I almost disappeared in the hell of social media. I would be like arguing with people. You know, I'd be like, why does Razorblade and Apple 666 have a problem with my act? You know, you're arguing with people and I didn't realize I was out of control. If you have OCD like I have it, Twitter's the worst because you keep checking. You can keep checking what people are saying about you.
Interesting. Yeah. No, you were you were pretty. I was all in.
I hated Ricky Gervais. Oh, yeah. Hated Ricky Gervais.
Now, guys come together, you and Ricky Gervais, and buried the hatchet?
I think I was right about the new atheists. You said they were great. I'm just kidding. The new atheists. The new atheists were such Islamophobes, and they started it.
True.
And rejected or you're a outcast because I was defending Islam. Can you believe it that people would have to argue with somebody about the right to someone to have to follow whatever religion they want to do? Imagine if I was articulate, Sam.
That would have been dangerous.
Yes. I can't promise soda in the water fountains, but if you elect me as vice president of our general organization, I can promise something.
All right. Andy Kindler.
All I'm thinking, I can't think about anything but Jay, and I'm going to cry.
That was distracting. I had to bring it up, but I knew that it would sort of be a segment killer.
Who's that guy used to go on? Remember when Chris Matthews had those horrible guests? And he always had horrible guests, but he had like an ex. Cadell, Patrick Cadell.
Yeah.
Well, they would bring on these people. This guy's a Democrat. Yep. And he had, okay.
Pat Cadell was a big Fox News guy.
Yep. Yeah. And they also had the guy,
Jimmy Carter.
And they had the triangulation guy too, right? Was it Richard Morris that they had?
Oh, Dick Morris. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. He would employ sex workers, but then like have them on the phone. There was something that like he wanted to show them. I think he wanted to impress them.
Yes.
That he was that talking was different. To the president.
Yeah.
But all right, Andy, always a pleasure. We will talk more about this. You should know that, Wildcard 26 tells us Hitler won the Iron Cross second class for wounds suffered as a message runner. So there he goes. He was mustard gassed.
That's right. Yeah, I'm just saying Hitler was mustard gassed. I'm just trying to build a little sympathy for him as opposed to. Right.
You never know the journey people are on. Exactly. So don't be judgmental.
Right. Don't judge.
Yeah, right. Don't judge. You got to wait until the end to find out.
You ever think about walking a mile in his big boots? Did you ever think of that?
Big.
No. Blisters. Andy.
I love you guys. Thank you, Emma. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay. Be good.
All right, folks. Going to head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. We will see you there. You can become a member of the show by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you get the free show free of commercials and you support the show. And you also get extra content in the fun half. It is your support that makes this show possible.
Content.
Your support makes this show possible, folks. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget AM Quickie. Find it at amquickie.com and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Don't forget, check out Know Me Show today. It is youtube.com/the Nomiki Show or twitch.tv/the_Nomiki_show. Again, people could just see my brain working there.
You got two different pronunciations in.
I did.
I still don't know what it is.
Shoot. Don't forget, check out The Antifada, patreon.com/The Antifada. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian universe?
Last night on Left Reckoning, we had Austin Gonzalez of Machete y Mate on to talk about the Ecuador elections, Puerto Rican statehood versus independence, and also the Jackson, Mississippi water issue. So check that out. Patreon.com/Left Reckoning and Left Reckoning on YouTube and podcast players.
See you in the fun half.
In for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it in my cross.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back.
I am a total cunt.
Bring back DJ Danerke's song, please.
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck. Reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
A hell of a lot of bank. A hell of a lot of bank.
you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black. African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
You see Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100. You can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on!
To pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.